For those of you with a memory, last year we would have said, welcome to the student achievement and school accountability.
The performance levels. So the performance levels for the certificates and for adequate progress for the school level, those were set again by committees of teachers and citizens generally, saying, okay, we know that this is the area and this is what we're going to assess, the subset of behaviors that we think is important. How much, what level of performance do we say is adequate? And we set those performance levels. So though that whole system is the way it's supposed to be done, and I think we did it well in Oregon. So that's what gives us the foundation for making decisions around education systems anyway. And now I'm going to get back to talk about what this means for the children.
When looked at it in a comprehensive way, what we're really doing in this state is quite revolutionary. You won't find it in many other states in the United States. We're saying that we have a belief and a commitment that all children, all kids, will be able to acquire certain things before they leave our system. One is that they will have mastered a comprehensive body of content that would be, if you will, the traditional courses or course selection or the types of content areas that they would be studying. But we've also said that all students would provide evidence of their proficiency on standards. Again, as we've talked about, the importance of improving instruction and accountability. We've also said that all students would have a plan for the next phases of their lives, a career plan and profile, a transition that they own and participate in, that they are actively engaged in creating, and that all students will have an opportunity to apply what they have learned to some real setting before they leave Oregon schools. And by this focus on proficiency, as opposed to just seat time or units of credit, it becomes possible to have students blend the barriers between educational institutions so that we'll be happy to share data with you. We have many high school students that are currently taking courses online if they need that. We have many students that take courses at community colleges and at universities. And the key here is to have a data management system that can pull all of that together around the student. Not around the school or the seat time or the institution, but around the student, so that the student begins to develop this comprehensive collection of evidence of what they are accomplishing in school, and to do that in a way that can be shared easily with other institutions and employers. Now, as a result of this work, we've seen, I think, some very dramatic improvement and progress. We have shown consistent progress, especially since 1996 with the establishment, or 1995, we established the benchmarks. 1996, we began the assessment process. Steady, strong growth on those assessments. I hope you had an opportunity in the last couple of days to see the dropout report that was just released. If you want to see a copy, it's posted on the website. We are very proud of the fact that we have the lowest dropout rate in this state in the last 10 years. We should celebrate that. At the same time, we continue to have a gap in our dropout rate, particularly among Latino and African American students, that we cannot ignore. And we have to continue to focus on improving those rates. Oregon, for the past 6 years, has had either number one or number two. It is a battle sometimes between our state and Washington State on who has the highest ACT and SAT test scores among high school graduates. And I'd like to emphasize it's among states where 40% or more of the students take the exam. There are some states that have a higher percentage, but they have a very low percentage of the students actually taking the exam. The more rigorous tests are states where 40% or more of the students take the exam.
Pat? Excuse me, isn't it true that in Oregon the percentage, at least last year, was like 53% of the seniors
That's
took
correct.
The SAT?
Correct. It was 53% of the seniors taking the exam and the highest results in the United States. We're very proud of that, very proud of what we have accomplished, not the agency certainly as much as our teachers and principals in our schools, what they have accomplished with our students. under at times very difficult circumstances. This slide shows you progress of our students comparing the 1991-92 data. If you remember my first remarks, that was when we first began to administer student assessment system to the current rate. You'll notice that in 1991-92, for example, in third grade, 52% of our third graders met standard. We thought that was pretty good at the time. I was an elementary principal and at that period of time, and I thought we were doing a pretty good job. It is, to me, a remarkable accomplishment that last year 85% of our third graders met those standards.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. And the standards have not changed through the years?
The standards basically have not changed, Representative Farr. We did have to adjust the standards last year to accommodate some of the requirements that were contained in the No Child Left Behind Act. And basically, if you will, they were increased rather than decreased. We had to add some things to the content standards, particularly at the third grade and fifth grade level, and we then had to adjust the assessments. But the basic standards have been the same.
But if anything, they became more rigorous.
And the overview, I know it's a little complicated, but you have in your packet the document that contains all of the all of our content standards.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Dalton.
Pat, how was it able to achieve such really remarkable increases in these benchmarks? I mean, how is that possible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, the answer is complicated, but I'll tell you what at least we have seen happening in the field. The existence of the standard, and the standard as Bill described for you, being developed with Oregon teachers, looking at real Oregon classrooms, what do we think those students should know and be able to do, then providing an assessment system that provides accurate information. This is what is in the field called a criterion reference piece of information, that you set a specific target and then you provide specific information on whether or not you're reaching that target or those criteria. Those two very powerful tools help teachers focus their instruction. And I believe what this reflects is focused instruction, being clear with our teachers, with our parents, and as students get older, being clear with our students in the classroom, what is expected, and how to get there. Now, at times, Representative Dalto, sometimes that is a difficult choice for a classroom teacher to make, because there might have been a favorite unit or a lesson or something that needed to be adjusted or changed in order to make sure that the content that we had established was fully integrated into that classroom. And there's a second thing. In 1991, when the original School Reform Act was passed, all schools are required to have a site council, a local school planning group. And the statute delegates to that site council the responsibility for creating a school improvement plan on an annual basis for that school. So since that period of time, there has been a lot of training at the school level on how to use data at a school level to analyze the school, to begin to identify targets for improvement, and to focus resources on, you know, those improvements. Resources are always very thin, so the schools have been able to target that. What we have done as an agency at the same time to support that is any grant-making opportunities that we have, most notably in the last 5 or 7 years, were Goals 2000 grants. These were federal dollars that were made available. The program is now ended. But for about a 7-year period of time, we only awarded grants to schools that had a high-quality school improvement planning process and were focused on the standard. So what begins to happen at the classroom level, the school and district level, at the agency level, you start to line up around clear expectations and clear measures. And from your experience in business and in other organizations, when you do that, you improve performance. because you begin to tighten the targeting of the resources of the organization to your objectives. And I think what these data indicate is the result of that.
Thank you.
Pat, the results here are impressive. Are the tests testing more kids, or what percentage would you say, or could you say, of the third graders took the math test or the reading test? I think that would be a pretty significant thing.
We've had a commitment to test all students all the way along. I remember getting a letter from Norma Paulus saying, you only tested 85% in this particular school, and what are you going to do about that? So I think we, since 91 on, we've been focusing on testing all of our students. The general trend has been to increase it. Although I would say the percentage meeting is not really an effect of the changes. Mm-hmm. We've also, one of the things we've done, and I, again, could speak long about that, is lots of options for students. We have developed alternative assessments to include more and more students in our system.
As proud as I am of Oregon teachers and principals and the parents who have been involved in these activities, we are not done, and we have many goals ahead of us. We do have many students that are not reaching these high standards, and particularly if you break these results down into different subgroups, look at performance of students, you will begin to see that there are areas of need where we need to improve. Secondly, the achievement gap, as it is called, or the gap between more affluent Caucasian students and students of color or students who speak a different language when they arrive in our schools, that gap is significant and it continues to be present. It's a frustrating element. In the packets that we've provided for you, there's some summary data charts from the Oregon report card. I apologize, the report card itself is not yet back from the printer, but if you would like to see the full version, it is available on our website. This was just released about 2 weeks ago. But the data indicate, when you see the chart, that over a 10-year period of time, student achievement for all students has gone up. But the gap between, for example, Caucasian students and African-American students, or between Caucasian students and limited English proficient students, continues to exist. We are pleased that achievement is going up, but we also want to close that gap and accelerate student achievement for those students.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Mr. Burke, is that gap, you're saying it continues to exist, is it widening, is it closing, are we making progress?
We have made a slight bit of progress. We have narrowed it somewhat for African-American students. It continues to be fairly strong for Latino students, and of course what we're doing is trying to also overcome potential language barrier there. It is closing, but we still have a long way to go.
I think that sums it up. I believe you're going to be hearing some more about No Child Left Behind, and the targets for closing the achievement gap will require a significant increase and a decrease of the gap.
One thing I would say, Representative Dalto, is that we are strongly committed to not closing the achievement gap by lowering the ceiling. And we want to be real clear about that. You don't close the achievement gap by slowing everybody else down. We want to maintain strong growth for student achievement, but also find ways to accelerate the growth for our students in need. Our dropout rates, although they are good, are still high. That 4.9 figure that you saw in the newspaper represents about 8,100 students. That's a lot of kids, and too many kids. So we have to continue our work on reducing the dropout rate. And then we are very aware, and I'm sure you have been hearing the same things. How can we make the system more efficient? How can we reduce paperwork, look at teacher workload, principal workload? Can we find ways to streamline this operation so that their energy is focused on the classroom where it should be? Now, one of the things that we are facing as a state is a very dramatic increase in changing demographics of our state. The chart that you are looking at is the 10-year growth pattern of ethnicity in our student enrollment figures. And you'll notice, obviously, a very dramatic increase, 194% increase in Latino students in the last 10 years. Now, I would like to say that our workforce has changed at a similar rate, but it has not. So we face the problem of having adequate bilingual teachers, administrators, materials, and, of course, programs that meet the needs of these students. So the superintendent's priorities related to where we are now are really very straightforward. Superintendent Castillo is strongly committed to closing the achievement gap in all of the ways that I've been trying to talk about today. Responding to the demographic changes, looking at our ELL population, improving our dropout rate, and strengthening our performance on state standards. We would like to look at expanding early childhood education as a priority. The legislature for the past two sessions has expressed a strong commitment in wanting to increase the number of students who enter kindergarten ready to learn. It is one of the Oregon Progress Board benchmarks. We've set a priority that by 2004 we would provide adequate funding for early childhood programs for all students in Oregon who are eligible. That current figure stands at about 45%. So we are still a long way away from 100%. And this is an area where we know from the research that high-quality early childhood education programs have a positive impact on student achievement. The superintendent is strongly committed to improving the performance of the entire system, starting first with the agency itself and making sure that we have a high-quality agency that is efficient and responsive to the public, and then to also look at how we bring together the various parts of this education system in Oregon in an efficient and effective way. And finally, to provide for high-quality accountability both to you and to the public on the progress that we are making. There are several issues. Let me be brief. The No Child Left Behind Act is certainly a key issue. There are many elements of this act that glad we will have a chance to talk about it on Monday. I've mentioned a couple of times the importance of a high-quality integrated data system. This is really critical to our success. Currently, it is very difficult to exchange information at times even from school to school, let alone from district to district, and certainly up to the state level. So you may well have questions for us about a piece of data that we would love to be able to provide for you, but we may not have an infrastructure that produces it. Now, we are actively engaged with higher ed, the community colleges, and the K-12 systems around the state to address this issue, and we look forward to an opportunity to share some information with you about that. We need to focus on high schools. What you saw in the data is that the progress at the elementary level is not at the same rate at the high school level. We know that there are a number of issues at the high school level, particularly class sizes currently and the comprehensiveness of the high school curriculum, that are all issues that need to be addressed, as well as creating smaller units within high schools that are more personal and more strongly connected to the student. It's unfortunate that Representative Hobson is not here. I wanted to express our personal thanks to her for chairing the Legislative Task Force on Special Education. This report was done in October. There was a response from the department in December. We look forward to working with this committee in how we can take the recommendations of that task force and move it forward. Special education is a huge issue, not only financially, but I just as a heads up, at the federal level, the reauthorization of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, is up for reauthorization in this session of Congress. So as the new Congress gets underway, there will be lots of debate about federal regulations involving special education. We know that there are several unfunded mandates that are putting pressure on schools, and we'd like an opportunity to identify and talk about those with the committee. The things that schools feel that they have to do or they're required to do by regulation and for which there are no funds, and what is the degree to which we could be flexible with our schools on some of those issues. And finally, of course, the allocation of resources to education and how that matches with other agencies. We know, for example, that the interaction between Department of Human Services and the Education Department is critical because both agencies are dealing with children and families. The good news, I believe, is that there's strong coherence of vision about what's happening in our state.
Pat, I'm sorry to interrupt at this point. I'd like to take the members back to the previous discussion on special education and unfunded mandates. For the benefit of the members, the special education task force, I think the idea was to kind of emulate what the development of the quality education model was, and Pat, I know you were a member of that.
Yeah.
Former Speaker Lundquist developed the quality education model, and I think it's been quite successful in directing a lot of attention to education funding relative to outcomes. And so the former speaker came to me and asked if I would sponsor that bill, and I did, and I was very pleased that it passed the legislature, and the governor approved it, and we had this 23-person committee of all task force, of all kinds of different folks from around the state. And I agree that Representative Hobson did an outstanding job because it was a very, very comprehensive and time-consuming effort. The unfunded mandates is one of my mandates in general is one of my personal goals. I think all of us in the legislature are interested in looking at mandates that are unfunded and maybe doing something about them. And also I'm thinking of mandates that might impose regulatory burden on schools and or teachers, which may have been passed a long time ago for some particular reason, but they may not be applicable in these days. And so that's one of my goals. I hope that we can take some real comprehensive looks at mandates as a subject matter, right, whether they're funded or even unfunded. So I'm sorry, Pat. I wanted to toss that out at this point.
Yeah. No, not at all, Mr. Chair. I think it's an absolutely critical conversation. This is the report that you're making reference to. Certainly make it available to members of the committee. Representative Hobson was the chair, and it, I think, forms a framework for some excellent conversation that we need to face in this session. The good news here, I believe, very fortunate that as a state we started this conversation 20 years ago, and that there is some coherence around the Department of Education, what was identified through the Quality Education Model and now the Quality Education Commission, or the QEC, and what is now contained in the federal No Child Left Behind Act. A focus on literacy, for example. All of these documents focus on literacy. There is a strong focus on improving teacher and administrator quality across the documents. A strong focus on finding ways to be flexible to connect with kids for success. Redefining high school, reforming high schools, improving our instructional programs. And then finally, being publicly accountable for results, specifying our targets, gathering data, being accountable for our results. And the fact that all of these have come together at this particular time, I find, frankly, pretty exciting that we're gradually getting on the same page and working towards some common goals at both the state level and federal level. The chair mentioned the Quality Education Commission. And a key component of the Quality Education Commission was the database initiative. It's really quite revolutionary in the state to have these very powerful tools as decision-making and planning tools to help us through these difficult waters. There's nobody in the state better able or qualified to talk about this than my colleague Nancy Heiligman, who has been involved in this from day one and has some information to share with you about the QEC.
Thank you, Pat. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Office of School Finance, Department of Education. What I would like to do today is just to give you a brief background on the Quality Ed model, relay some of the recent findings of the commission, and to compare the Quality Ed model findings in terms of dollars to the governor's balanced budget proposal, and then give you a glimpse of future plans of some of the activities that the commission is planning over the next several months. The commission charge that is now in statute, the Education Commission, was established formally by the last regular legislative session, and as Chair Backlund and Pat mentioned, the original quality education model was developed by the Legislative Council on Quality Education, led by former Speaker Lynn Lundquist. And this commission is actually the third go-around in terms of updating and refining that original model. The statute charges the commission to use research, data, professional judgment, and public values to identify best practices for meeting quality education goals, and also to determine their cost. The commission also looks at current education practices and determines what the current costs are, compares current or what the commission calls baseline costs to the costs of implementing a fully funded model. And then also very importantly, the commission also projects student performance based on different levels using both the current practices and the recommended practices. The quality education model really has two purposes. The first is that the model is a vision of what high-performing schools can be and what results they can get. And Pat mentioned earlier the characteristics that you would expect to see in a high-performing school. And the commission has done a great deal of work working with panels of experts, looking at the research, and determining what kinds of resources and effective practices would be needed in the school to meet those quality goals that the legislature established in law. And then secondly, the model is also a policy tool for decision makers, and it is a very powerful tool that legislators and other state policymakers can use as you develop education budgets and make very difficult decisions. For example, the model can be used at any level of funding to determine what are potential program impacts at the school level of various decisions, and then also what kinds of adjustments in performance expectations might need to be made based on funding levels. The model is based on prototype schools, on three schools, elementary, middle, and high, and the commission designs programs at these schools and allocates resources based on data and research. And Pat has mentioned the database initiative project, which the legislature commissioned in 1997, and that is also a very powerful tool in that we collect at the department school level data, very detailed data on what schools are spending, how they allocate their resources, and what results they're getting. And those data are available in one great big database at the Department of Education, and reports are available on the website and available to legislative analysts as well as ODE staff. The model then takes the costs at each prototype school and calculates the statewide cost. And so it really does translate from the school level to the statewide level and provides a tool to do all kinds of different what-ifs at different funding levels and different levels of expectation. The commission has recognized that to create high-performing schools, we need adequate resources, but also educational practices based on research, that they must be effective instructional practices. And I think another real key to that the model is local decision-making. And Pat mentioned also that the legislation about site councils, the model is based on the assumption that the state sets funding levels and expectations, but the decisions about how to meet those expectations and allocate those resources are made at the local level by local school boards and local site councils. And that is something about the model that's often misunderstood, because there are these prototype schools that set out a vision, but that vision is not prescriptive. There's lots of room for local decision making. The Quality Education Commission 2002 set of recommendations, and they have really set a target goal that 90% of all students in Oregon would reach the state reading and math benchmarks in this decade. Now, that has moved out at the high school level to 2012. Basically because the funding has not kept up with the original recommendations. One thing that the commission will be looking at over the next several months is how these target expectations fit with NCLB, because the federal act requires 100% of all students to meet state benchmarks by 2014. So they will be looking at that and looking at those implications. The commission in 2002 realized that there was a very different revenue picture than even 2 years before, and did not, while they recommended full implementation of the quality ed model, they understood that it was not likely in this kind of a revenue situation. They did recommend, however, a set of priorities, and that Oregon stay the course on the direction that the state has taken on school improvement, and particularly to maintain the focus on reading in early grades, to increase professional staff development, and to support high school restructuring and some much of the work that the State Board of Education has been doing on graduation requirements. The commission has been very concerned that the gap is growing between current school funding and the amount needed for a quality education and to reach the goals that are in statute. As we look at the gap for this current biennium, 2001-03, with the original budget legislatively adopted in 2001, the gap between the fully implemented model and current practice was $862 million. In the 2003-05 governor's balanced budget, that number has now grown to $1.9 billion projected for next biennium.
Nancy, that's based on the governor's proposed budget of $5.05 billion?
That's correct,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman. Why is the funding gap growing? There are several reasons. The first is that state funding has not kept pace with inflation over the past decade. Then, of course, there's the current revenue shortfall that is affecting every part of state government and our local schools. And then, in addition to that, student demographic changes and other cost factors have driven up costs for many school districts even above the rate of inflation. This graph shows, it's a history of funding per student over, well, since 1991 and projected out through 2004-05. I think these numbers are probably a little bit hard to see, but in 1991, prior to Measure 5, if we adjust for inflation, and these are in 2001 dollars, the amount per student available to school districts was approximately $6,484 per student, as compared to $5,769 projected for next biennium, and that represents about a 12% decrease, again, inflation adjusted. If you look at the same comparison, only using weighted students, and this the school funding formula weights students based on student needs. So, for example, a special education student is weighted at 2, and English language learners get an additional 0.5 weighting. If you look at that, the decrease over this time from the inception of Measure 5 is actually almost 22% when adjusted for inflation. Major cost drivers for school districts, in addition to that, just that revenues haven't kept pace with inflation. Pat showed you some of the demographic trends. Special education, our population of special ed students has increased at about an average rate of 3% each year over the decade, and English language learners have increased at an 18% annual rate over the decade, and while the general population of students grew at about 1%. So very different demographics than we saw 10 years ago. Other costs affecting districts, of course, are the increases in the PERS system, health care cost increases. Declining enrollment is another issue that affects about two-thirds of our districts. We have about 10% of our districts that are very fast-growing, but two-thirds have declining enrollment, and as their enrollment declines, their overhead costs remain the same, but they get fewer dollars as students leave the district.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. Ms. Heiligman, the special ed increases, is that in any way due to a redefinition of the category?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Farr, the categories really haven't changed. Mm-hmm. We have seen over the decade is an increase in the number of special education students, but also an increase in the severity of many of the disabilities that children are exhibiting.
Thank you.
And one last issue also facing school districts is just capital needs. Many of our school buildings are old. I think the average age is about 45 years old, and capital needs, maintenance, upgrades are just more expensive, and that often has to come out of operating budgets. This is a comparison of the fully implemented quality ed model cost compared to first the 0103 budget, the state school fund amount, and this is the state portion. The state appropriation originally for this biennium was $5.2 billion. It's recommended at $5.05 billion under the governor's balanced budget. And the fully implemented model for 0305 is at $6.9 billion. So that just illustrates where that gap is coming from.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Nancy, I think I know this number, but please refresh me. What's the current legislatively approved 2001-2003 state school fund budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Noland, right now it's at approximately $4.93
billion.
Which is prior to the Measure 28 selection, which has, what, $95 million K-12?
Right. Just to make sure I'm understanding, that's the current appropriation. If Measure 28 passes, $95 million will be added to that.
That's correct, Representative Noland.
Thanks.
For future activities, some of the issues identified by the commission last fall were to develop additional student performance measures. The current model really focuses on the assessment scores for reading and math, and the commission realizes that a quality education includes many more things than just a focus on those two areas. And so they intend to develop additional outcome measures. For example, one possibility would be to develop some post-high school measures of student success to see how well our students are doing once they get out of our system. So as an example, that's something that they're intending to study. Looking at middle school programs, the commission, really the first two models concentrated a lot on elementary schools. This last report looked at the high school in great detail, and so the commission is looking at the middle school area next time around. The commission also expressed an interest in looking at demographic trends and forecasting those out over time, so that and then raising the question of whether or not the current school funding formula is still working well. And I don't believe the commission intends to tinker with that formula, but mainly to gather data, make recommendations, and provide data to legislative committees that would want to look at the formula. And then they have also expressed grave concerns about capital needs in Oregon and the state of the facilities. So those are the issues they've identified for the next several months. The final report from the commission 2002 is at the printer, and we expect it to be out within the next month. We will certainly get a copy to this committee. I'm certain that the members of the commission would be very pleased to come and talk to your committee over the next several months if that is a possibility.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we appreciate the attention of the committee and the opportunity to come before you. We are finished with our presentation. Certainly open to any questions.
Okay. Any questions or... Well, thank you very much. Now, before we adjourn, I notice with the help of our able administrator that the superintendent has sneaked into the room, and we know that she's not been feeling well, but if you'd like to come up and address the committee or say hello, whatever you'd like, superintendent, we'd appreciate that. And thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon, and I very much appreciate the opportunity for us to provide you with information today, and we look forward to working with you during this legislative session and being as helpful as we can be on providing you with really good information to help you do the work that you're doing. So, just wanted to come and say hello.
Well, we're glad you did. So, thank you very much for a surprise visit, and it was a welcome surprise.
Yes. So, I'm glad to hear that.
Very good. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, with that, I think we will adjourn our first meeting, and thank you, everyone. Meeting is adjourned.